It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows, and I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with, and Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5, with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly, you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. Welcome to the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am not Gabe Kuhn, but I am a former Memphis Tigers videographer and your host for the next 2 days, Connor Dunning. You can find me on Twitter at CDunning929. You can also find me over on Blue Sky. Just look up Connor Dunning and I should pop up. I hope you had an amazing holiday weekend celebrating the 4th of July. We've got a fun show lined up for you today to get you back into the week. You can listen to us anytime on radio, the Odyssey app, and now on the iHeart app, all free, all the time. You can find your number one sports station in Memphis and the Mid-South. Got a lot to cover today. We are going to open on the Grizzlies trading Jay Huff, adding Mr. Jock Landale. Their summer league opener with Utah will preview tonight's game. And then at 4:30, I'm very, very excited about this. We're going to have president of the Memphis Touchdown Club, Greg Cotton, on to talk about their fall speaker series, which was just announced today. Spoiler alert, it's an absolutely loaded lineup. A lot of head coaches, got some classic voices. Make sure you go to memphistouchdownclub.com for more information on that. But he will give you all the information you need at 4:30. At 5 p.m., as always, we'll have the great David Cobb on from CBS Sports. Then we'll do the Blitz, talking about Penny Hardaway and Memphis Hoops schedule. And we got to talk about Danny Ainge, because for years, I have had the theory that Danny Ainge is a fraud. I've always thought Danny Ainge was a fraud. I don't give him credit for what happened in Boston. And I think what he has done in Utah is absolutely insane. The trade he made today, I do not understand. He does not know how to manage assets. He does not know how to manage players. He sits on things for far too long until their value completely disappears. And for some reason, Danny Ainge is thought of as one of the better GMs. Danny Ainge is a fraud. And we are going to go over why Danny Ainge is a fraud when we get to the Blitz. I'm joined, as always, by one of the hardest working men in radio, the Honorable King George, Costco George. Definitely doesn't have another nickname that people on this station like to say every once in a while. You can find him on Twitter at KingGeorge94. George Ruggiero, what's up?
How's it going?
George, how was your fourth?
Good, good. Had some of the friends over, hang out, a little barbecue, a little cookout. It was a good time. It felt weird, though, come Saturday, because I was like, wait a second. Yesterday wasn't Saturday. Midday, I was like, oh, I have to get ready for work tomorrow. No, I don't.
We had a longer weekend. You know, I still came into the office on Thursday, but we didn't have shows on Thursday.
Yeah.
Friday, everybody was off, obviously, for the 4th of July. So, yeah, it was one of those kind of four-day weekends. So today when I woke up, I was cursing the world. me getting up in the mornings is one of the hardest things that I have to do. I genuinely can't do it. I have to wake up and drink cold brew coffee immediately, or I'm going to be grumpy. And I hate waking up in the mornings. But I was excited to wake up this morning because I got to talk about a Grizzlies trade.
I'm not allowed to tell people about why you're tired all the time first thing in the morning.
No. Okay. No, no, we don't have to talk about that. So the Grizzlies over the weekend, they traded Jay Huff, one of our fan favorites.
Yeah.
You find him around the city all the time, run into him a couple of times at Trader Joe's. Great people. But the Memphis Grizzlies have traded center Jay Huff to the Indiana Pacers for 1 second-round pick and 1 second-round pick swap, the team announced on Sunday. Huff turned 27 in August, and he had a pretty good season for the Grizzlies last year. The stretch five averaged under 7 points while shooting 40% from three on 3.1 attempts per game and 11.7 minutes for the Grizzlies. He was a good fill-in. He gave us some exciting plays, the reverse dunks, the Huff stuffs. We're going to miss Jay Huff, but ultimately, I think that this was good asset management by Zach Kleiman and the front office. Now, there were a few things that happened over the weekend that I found amusing when it came to Grizzlies news and how things work in the NBA. The first one that I thought was very funny was the seven-team trade got announced. And everybody lost their minds because the Grizzlies weren't mentioned in that seven-team trade. Mayshak, people were like, wait a second, I thought he was a Memphis Grizzly. He is a Memphis Grizzly. That trade had to be announced first, and then the trade with the Grizzlies could go through. I don't understand. And listen, I understand like fans not understanding it. Some people that cover the Grizzlies for like from time to time.
For a living.
No. None of the beat writers and stuff like
well,
that.
Well, I mean, of course not.
But
they're
more of
very
like some of
people.
The bloggers were like, wait,
oh, okay.
Like how, the Grizzlies, did they screw this up? And it's like, no, it's how the NBA information works. Patience is a virtue, ladies and gentlemen. So you just had to be patient.
It came through,
guess what? He's a Memphis Grizzly.
Take a breath.
He might be premiering tonight. It's going to be exciting. Jessica Benson, she said that she caught up with him. She posted on Twitter that he said that his intention is to give it a go tonight. It would be very exciting if we got to see him on the basketball court. I would love to see how his defense works with Small and Wells out there. It just feels like potentially the best perimeter defense you could possibly have in a summer league game. But I found that amusing. But the Jay Huff trade.
Mm-hmm.
Jay Huff gets traded, and there's 5 to 10 minutes of the Grizzlies don't have a center. Now, I assumed when Jay Huff got traded, oh, the Grizzlies are definitely going to be bringing in a center or trading for a center as well. Because it wouldn't make any sense when you have Zach Edey injured and when you have Jaren Jackson Jr. injured and when you have Brandon Clark injured to not have another big on your team. Jay Huff was pretty much the only healthy big that they had left breathing on the Memphis Grizzlies roster. So when they traded him off, got 2 second-rounders for him, pretty good.
Not bad.
Got back basically your value for Cedric Coward. Shored that up. Not a bad move at all. People were losing their minds for 5 to 10 minutes. What are the Grizzlies doing? What are the Grizzlies doing?
I had to go back to my Twitter because my feed is just the best. It's just the quote tweeted, the original one. What is Kleiman cooking?
Yeah, what is Kleiman?
6 minutes later, we now know what Kleiman is cooking.
We know what Kleiman is cooking now. He is bringing in Australian big man Jock Landale. He has agreed to a deal with the Memphis Grizzlies. And I got to say, as much as I love Jay Huff, he was so much fun to watch. He wasn't what the Grizzlies needed at their center position. He would have done fine filling in for the center position to begin the season. But ultimately, the things that Jay Huff does well is not what the Grizzlies need an NBA center to do well, especially one that's going to get starter minutes at the beginning of the season, as we are assuming, because Jaren Jackson Jr. probably not going to be ready. And we know that Zach Edey, he's got some time before he's going to be ready. But Landale, what I like about him is he does what the Grizzlies need. He protects the rim. He can knock down a three every once in a while. He shot 42.3% from three last season. Pretty good for a big guy. But he sets screens, defends the rim, and he's just a smart basketball player. He's given starter minutes to the Houston Rockets before. He fits the pick and roll system that T.I. is going to want to run more than Taylor Jenkins did. That's what the Grizzlies are looking for. Jay Huff was more of a stretch five. That's not really what the Grizzlies need. Now, they do need his shooting. That's something that will absolutely be missed. But I think that one thing with Jay Huff is his defense, he left some things to be desired. Just a solid rotation guy. I think he's going to do very well in Indiana. He's going to give them what they're looking for. They're trying to replicate Miles Turner with a few different guys. Jay Huff is going to step into that role. He can shoot a three. He's going to be, you know, high-flying. He's exciting around the rim. But ultimately, for your starting center, I don't think that you need somebody who isn't very good at setting screens and who isn't very good at protecting the rim. I understand that we have evidence of Jay Huff blocking shots, but ultimately, his defense, he left things to be desired. And I think that Jock will come in and be a better defender. He'll be a better screen setter. And every once in a while, he's going to knock down a three for you. I saw some people getting really excited about his three-point shooting. It's good, not great, you know, 42%, but the volume.
Volume isn't there. That's not his game.
Right.
He's not there to stand at the perimeter. I think that's the biggest thing for me is his screen setting and the way that he plays with his physicality, because he's just a bigger, thicker five than Jay Huff is. I mean, Jay Huff, 7 foot, string bean. Man, he can shoot. Man, he can fly to the rim, but that's not exactly what they need. And I think watching as much Houston Rockets as we were forced to do last year, we saw plenty of Jock Landale. He ended up with more than a handful of starts for them. Most of them spot starts, but what does he do well? He uses his size. Both offensive and defensive rebounding is his game. He can move off the pick and roll. He doesn't just have to set the pick and then, you know, keep standing there. He can get to the rack after that for lob threats. I mean, he's a very solid, just kind of almost classic center in a way. And that's exactly what they're looking for until Zach Edey comes back. And then it's his role. I think that's the biggest thing that we need to, you know, not even put an asterisk on, but talk about this with a little bit of sense and nuance, is that he's not planning to be the starting five for the entire season. Also, it's July 7th. The work ain't done yet.
No, the work's not done yet. There's still a few moves to be made. And when we get into the blitz and we talk about some of the things that the Jazz did today, there is an option that has presented itself that some Grizzlies fans have pointed out. And I've talked to our good buddy Parker Fleming, who, by the way, is going to join me in studio tomorrow at 5 o'clock. We're going to have Parker Fleming in here talking about the NBA offseason, Grizzlies Summer League, all those things. So make sure you're tuned in.
I'm so ready.
Tomorrow at 5 p.m. Just genuinely one of the best basketball minds we have in the city.
Love it.
Probably in the country. Just an absolute
Parker's awesome.
genius when it comes to basketball. But yeah, like, Jock, he's going to come in, and he's going to be your starter at the beginning of the season. But then when Edey comes back, he's going to be a really good backup to have at that center position. He does similar things to Zach Edey. It's not going to be a huge transition between the two of them. I think that Edey can certainly learn some things from him as well. He's technically a veteran here in the NBA, got a lot of experience in international play. He was really good during the Olympics when you go and look at some of those games. But one stat that really jumped out to me was last year he ranked third in on-ball screen set per 100 possessions among players to set at least 500 on-ball screens. He is a pick-and-roll guy. He knows how to run that. And what did we learn last year with Ja Morant in this Grizzlies offense? They need to run more pick and roll. I don't think it needs to be an entire pick and roll offense, but having as much pick and roll in your offense is going to help maximize Ja Morant. It'll help maximize Zach Edey, and Ja can fill in that position very, very well. He also recorded career highs in field goal percentage from the field and from three. When you look at his around the rim percentage, he shot about 65%. From around the rim, which is very good from a big. He's an efficient basketball player. He's going to be in the right spots. He's serviceable on defense. He's a plus defender. He's not an amazing defender by any means, but he is a plus defender. And like you said, very solid rebound. He had 17.6% defensive rebounding last year, and he grabbed 11.7% of his teammates' missed shots. So he's going to give you plus rebounding on the defensive side, plus rebounding on the offensive side. You know, people have made this comparison, and I understand it is a bit funny just because of where they are from, but it does seem like the Grizzlies were like, can we just bring in somebody as close to Steven Adams as humanly possible? And it seems like that's what they're doing. Just a giant man with an Australian accent.
I guess, from Oceania.
Yes. Who is going to be able to come in and set screens, grab rebounds, and protect the rim. That's all you're going to need him to do. You don't need him to do anything fancy outside of that. When you dive into some more of his numbers, his per 36 is exciting. He's 14.4 points per game, 9.9 rebounds. Per 100 possessions, it goes up to 19.5 points per game, 13.3 rebounds. His defensive rating was 111. Offensive rating was 126. Offense is successful when he's on the court. Defense is successful when he's on the court. Parker Fleming, again, we're going to talk to him tomorrow. He'll be able to fill you in a little bit more on Jock. Pointed out that his plus-minus last year when he was on the court was very good when Steven Adams was out for a little bit and he filled in. The Rockets were winning basketball games. They were winning minutes with Jock on the court. I think that he's going to help Ja Morant, and he's just going to be a good fit for the Grizzlies. He's not perfect, and like George said, they're not done. This isn't some cherry on top, oh, the Grizzlies are now a contender type of move. It's just a good move with good asset management. I think that getting some of the value back that you sent off to get a player like Cedric Howard was solid. It makes sense for the Grizzlies. I think that he is the type of center that makes sense for what this offense and what this defense is going to try to do next season. Just makes more sense than Jae Huff. I love Jae Huff. I'm going to miss him. Great human being to have in the locker room. Great human being to have around the city. But ultimately, didn't fit what the Grizzlies necessarily needed to do. He's an exciting basketball player. He knocks down threes. He's got fun dunks. But he wasn't consistent enough on the defensive end. I think that Jock's going to give you some more consistency. It may not be as flashy. It's not a sexy name by any means. Again, it's not some we have to throw a parade because of the signing. It's just good asset management, good GMing by Zach Kleiman. And I do think that it's going to lead to successful basketball for the Grizzlies next season. So I'm excited to see how he fits in with this group. I like his size, I like his experience, and I like what he does on the court.
The main thing I'm really curious about, because obviously we like what we saw in Houston the last season or two, the one thing I am going to be cautiously optimistic about is the fact that he's probably, at least in the beginning of the year, going to be going from averaging around that 12 to 13 to 14 minute per game mark. And that role is going to be a lot bigger. I mean, we're assuming, depending on who ends up being healthy and who's not, it's going to be splitting time with him and BC, if BC is in fact healthy for the start of the season, which, have we heard anything about that timeline with the injections to his knee? I don't believe so. So how is it going to look with him going from that 12 minutes a game from last season to upwards of 20? I think that'll be one of the more interesting things to see. And if they can pick up, another big to play behind him, because right now it's kind of just Jock. I mean, they don't have any of the bigs on a two-way right now, which we're probably going to get into here in just a little bit as we talk about the Summer League game from Saturday and get you guys ready for the game tonight. They have some in their system. They picked up Jae Huff off a Summer League contract last season. I think it'll be interesting to see what Kleiman does there. What do you think of Bacot? Because he was one of the guys that I was interested by because of how he played last year with the Hustle, but that is, of course, minor league ball.
I wish I liked him more.
Yeah.
I wish I liked him more. It's one of those deals where when he is playing lesser competition,
ooh, he can fill it up.
I think he is a very effective basketball player. I don't know if he's going to be able to hold his own with NBA minutes.
Yeah.
And as much as I like him as a player, as much as I understand that he eats in, down in South Haven, I don't know if I want to use a two-way spot on him. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think that we can be honest about it. We'll talk about it in a second. But like Pullen, not sure he needs a two-way spot either. It just has never really impressed me. Certainly didn't impress in that first Summer League game.
No.
I think that the two draft picks that the Grizzlies made, outside of the first round, obviously, are the two guys that should probably get those two-way contracts to fill up those spots now that Cam Spencer isn't there.
But then what about the third? That's kind of where, what I'm looking at.
If they do it,
and I'm not set on him by any means.
It's I need to see more from him.
Of course.
I need to see more from him. His first stint in Summer League wasn't great. Every once in a while, he would get the ball in his hands, and for some reason, it seemed like the game was moving a little bit too quick for him. He would fumble it a little bit. He wasn't great on the boards. He wasn't great defensively. There wasn't one thing that he did really well. It's always concerning to me when somebody plays, 16 minutes in a basketball game and one that you win by 12 and he's the only negative plus minus on the court.
Yeah.
That is a bit concerning, especially when he was rolling with mostly three NBA players, three legitimate NBA players in Jalen Williams, Gigi Jackson, and Cam Spencer. I think he is somebody to keep an eye on. If he turns it around in Summer League, then maybe we can have a conversation about it. But I'm not sure. It's
I mainly bring him up out of the guys that played in the Summer League, which obviously there are more bigs on the Summer League roster that I'd like to take a look at, mainly because the only other one that played that I can recognize the other day was Lovering. Also did not inspire. So it's like, okay, we do have this extra two-way spot, should Pullen not have that two-way contract. I do think they need depth until Edie comes back. I think we all agree on that. That's 100% true. There are more moves to be made. I mean, Cole Anthony is still on his contract, and we know good and well they're trying to move that or stretch and wave. Where are they going for the extra size? Now, they very well could see someone else on another Summer League roster and say, hey, that guy's playing pretty well. Let's snatch him up like they did with Jay Huff.
I wouldn't be shocked if that's what happened. Because
neither would I.
None of the bigs right now on the Summer League roster are exciting to me. And again, I think that Bacon is the type of player who might be able to turn it around, but he has concerns with his game already.
Yeah.
He's an undersized guy. And would he get pushed around in the NBA? Again, he does really well in the G League. He does great down in South Haven. But would those numbers translate to the NBA?
Or is that just his level?
Oh, yeah. Is that just his level? It might be.
Very well could be.
I don't know. So that's something to keep an eye on. They do have some more work to do. It's just, I don't think he's the answer necessarily. Again, he may surprise the rest of Summer League, but that first game when I was watching him was extremely underwhelming, especially when you had the deck kind of stacked for you with some of the players that you had out there, and they seemed to just be moving much faster than he was. Like, what's really popping into my head, there was specifically one fast break where he had one guy to beat, and he just fumbled the basketball away, and plays like that can be concerning. They can be concerning, but we'll go ahead and jump in to that first Summer League game overall. The Grizzlies won their first Summer League game 92-80 against the Oklahoma City Thunder. Jalen Wells looked amazing in this game. He looked like an NBA player. He dominated the game. You have people asking the question now, why is Jalen Wells playing in the Summer League? And listen, I understand.
I think he just wants to.
One, he wants to. He said in an interview that he just wants to play in the Summer League. Two, he's coming off of a pretty big injury. I think he wants to ramp up into the offseason, give himself some more time. I don't mind him doing a Utah run. Not sure I need to see Jalen Wells in Vegas, you know, especially with how injuries work with the Memphis Grizzlies. I still don't know if we need to find out whether or not the FedEx Forum is built on ancient burial grounds, because I just do not understand how this team is so snake-bitten from injuries. But Jalen Wells looked amazing in that first Summer League game. He finished with 24-3, and he added two steals. The big thing that jumped out to me was his perimeter defense was unbelievable. He was picking guys up from 94 feet. He was making everything difficult for the Thunder Summer League team. He also looked like he had put on about 10 pounds of muscle. Just looked big.
He looked big.
Just looked big out there. I'm very excited for a potential Jalen Wells leap. I'll also say G.G. Jackson looked really good in this game. He looked calm. He looked under control. One thing that I really noticed in this game was how much G.G. Jackson was trying to get downhill. I understand he took 8 threes. He made 3 of them. Good game from 3 from G.G. Jackson. But he was attacking the basket. That's what G.G. Jackson needs to do. We don't want him just standing around the perimeter. He's a big-bodied guy, an athletic guy. If he attacks the rim, gets downhill, he's very difficult to beat. That being said, the defense, still some things to be desired from G.G. Jackson, but I do think that we saw a bit of an improvement from last time we saw him. That's really the thing with G.G. Jackson. We're not looking for offense, I think, during the Summer League from G.G. We're not even looking during the preseason from offense from G.G. We know what he can do on the offensive end. He's highly talented on that end. Can he put it together and have a full game? Can he put the defensive proponent into his game? That's what he needs to do. It's not just stopping players. It's not just the block shots and the steals. It's being in the right spots. It's anticipating what the offense is going to do. The good news is he's going to have a lot of defenders around him that have veteran time in the NBA. I think that Kentavious Caldwell-Pope being one of them is going to certainly help G.G. Jackson. You've got Jaren Jackson Jr. there, defensive player of the year, all defensive guy. Hopefully he can continue to learn from these guys. I will say, I did find his quote after this game Very interesting, though, when he was talking about Isolo's system and how this new coaching staff explains things more than the former coaching staff. He just seemed to look more comfortable in that first summer league game, and that is a positive sign for the Grizzlies.
That is one thing that I noticed, and I kind of wanted to at least put it out there and wonder aloud about this in a way. How much of that is just not necessarily... This is not anything bad about Taylor Jenkins. We know Taylor Jenkins is extremely detail-oriented. We know he's a good basketball coach. Is that almost just a culture thing, though, with Isolo being from where he's from? English is not his first language. This is absolutely like a thing. And we've even seen it in his post-game interviews, or just interviews in general, when he was the acting head coach. He kind of just says it like it is. I love it, for one. I mean, going from someone who at times we have all heard the word salad, you're not getting that from Isolo. We might not love how short some of the quotes are. You know, we kind of need some airtime, but he's going to tell you like it is. I think that's one of the big things that we're going to end up getting that's a positive from Isolo, and what I hope is a coaching staff that he's building in a similar way to communicate his message in that same way that's cut and dry, direct. Yeah, there's going to still be some detail to it, obviously. You have to. It's you're coaching an NBA basketball team in a basketball system that you want to implement. There's got to be that level of detail. But it also could just be sometimes, hey, you got to tell a guy just what it is. And I think that's something that might be lost with some of these younger players is the amount of detail and the amount of information could just be too much, as opposed to, hey, I need you to do this, this, and this. That's it.
I do think there's something to, he seems to be more direct. I don't think he's trying to be these guys' friends at all, which I think in the NBA can be the downfall of some coaches. And we've had long conversations for...
But I also don't necessarily think he's going to be end up being one of these hard-ass coaches.
No.
Where players go on after and we're like, no. I couldn't stand playing for that guy.
I do think, though, there can be a point to be made about Jenkins probably hit his ceiling with this group of guys.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's any mystery about that. It's why he lost his job when he did. Taylor Jenkins was a good NBA head coach, but there were questions about whether he could get this team over the hump. And I do think that there may have been a loss of confidence in the systems that he was running, because the offense was a bit of a mess last year. You know, some players were on board with it. Some players weren't on board with it. It maximized some players while it didn't maximize some others. You know, I do think that we could say that Jaren Jackson Jr. was one of those guys who was maximizing that new offense. But then you looked at a player like Ja Morant or Zach Edey or Desmond Bane, and they weren't very maximized in it. You felt like they were struggling to find their way in that system. And then when you look at the defense, which was kind of Jenkins' bread and butter, we could say, you know, even though the offense isn't necessarily working, that defense is going to show up. You know that defense is going to show up. And then it fell off of a cliff the last 2 months of the season, and it was dreadful. The Grizzlies were not very good at the end of the season. Jenkins probably deserved to lose his job. Did it come a little bit early? Maybe. But at the end of the day, he would have been fired this offseason anyway. T.I. got the job. I'm curious to see what he does with it. I don't love that there wasn't a coaching search, but at the same time, they brought him over. The circumstances that came into his hire, it makes sense why he was their guy.
Yeah.
And I do have to wonder if some of the, I don't want to say drama, but the disjointedness of the team last year was because you had the shadow of Isolo. Jenkins knew, okay, if I don't get it done, the guy in waiting is my assistant coach.
He's next to me with the clipboard.
He's right next to me with the clipboard, and he's going to take my job probably. So I do have to wonder if the players are just a little bit more locked into what he's saying, because he's not trying to buddy them.
Yeah.
He's just going to say, this is what I need you to do. And when it comes to G.G. Jackson specifically, I need you to play defense. That's what we need you to do. We know what you can do offensively, but what are you going to do defensively? Defense is how you're going to make it onto the court. And I know that some people were frustrated with how Jenkins was using G.G. There were moments where it did feel like he was burying him a little bit. At the same time, we can be honest about it. G.G. came off of an offseason where he broke his foot. He got started late.
Yep.
And then when he came back, he wasn't very good. He wasn't great offensively for a while. And he was bad defensively. And yes, the Grizzlies had other bad defenders on the court. I'm not saying they didn't. They absolutely had other bad defenders. But with Gigi, it wasn't about effort. It was about just not being in the right spots, not being able to predict where the offenses were going. He was causing guys to have to overhelp, and he was a liability on the defensive end. Can you become a non-liability on the defensive end? Because this is going to be a gap year for the Grizzlies. We've talked about it the last few weeks. They're not going to be contending next year. They're just not. The West is too good, and they're not ready to yet. The Bain trade signaled a retooling. It's not a rebuild. It's a retooling. The draft signaled a retooling. I like what they did in the draft. We'll see if it pays off. Jock, we'll see if it pays off. There's a lot of things where we got to see if it pays off. But it's a retooling year, and it's an opportunity for a guy like Gigi Jackson to really find his spot in the NBA, to figure out what he can do on the defensive end. Because this is still crazy. He's going into his third season. He is still the youngest player on the Grizzlies. That is wild. He is still the youngest player on the Grizzlies. People that want to sell their Gigi Jackson stock, I'll take it all. But what he showed in that first game of Summer League, I think, was promising. He showed more activity on the defensive end. There's still some left to be desired, but I like what I saw, and I'm excited to see what he can do tonight in that Summer League game. One more player I want to talk about before we go to break and get Greg Cotton on from the Touchdown Club of Memphis, Cam Spencer. Dude, he's just smooth. He's smooth. Every single time he shoots, I expect it to go in. He's always in the right spots. High IQ type of player. He has an edge to his game. And yeah, one thing that I really like about Cam Spencer, who finished with 14-5, knocked down a couple of threes as well, he's not afraid. He plays with confidence. And to be honest, we saw a player last year for the Grizzlies who was a three-point specialist in Luke Kennard, who sometimes was too hesitant to shoot the basketball. And I think that one thing the Grizzlies have done this offseason is they're making sure that they're going to have guys on the roster who aren't afraid to shoot when they have an open shot. You brought in somebody like Ty Jerome, who we know not afraid to shoot the basketball.
Cam and Ty and KCP.
KCP, he's not afraid to shoot either.
He lets it rip.
And if you've been listening to his interviews, seems very excited to play with the Grizzlies, and specifically somebody like John Morant. Because, yeah, KCP last year had a bit of a down year. When you actually dive into the numbers, it was really the first half of the season, the back half of the season, looked like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope for the most part. But we can be honest about the Magic. They didn't have a point guard. Like, they didn't have a playmaking point guard. Jalen Suggs, point of attack guy, defense first. Not setting up his shooters necessarily.
No.
Playing with somebody like John Morant is going to give KCP a ton of wide open threes in the corner. And that is what he specializes in. And if they can set him up for that, I think they'll have a high rate of success. But yeah, I think the Grizzlies are trying to bring guys in who are going to be aggressive, who aren't afraid to shoot the basketball when they have an open shot. And I think that Cam Spencer absolutely fits that. I'm excited to see what Cam Spencer could do now that he has a fully guaranteed contract with the NBA team. He's not on a two-way anymore. I'm glad he's on this roster. I'm excited to watch more games with his father sitting next to me because, you know, Cam's a dog, but I could tell you, that mentality came from his dad. If you could hear some of the things he was saying to the Miami Heat players while we were while we were in the arena, it was phenomenal.
I
cannot repeat them over here. I think my brother still has a bruise on his chest from when Cam Spencer threw a behind-the-back pass to somebody and they knocked down a three, and just the people's elbow came flying at my brother. It was hysterical. So I'm excited to see what Cam Spencer can do. The Grizzlies are going to be back in action tonight in Summer League. Make sure you check that out. But for now, we're going to go ahead and go to break. Next up, we're going to have Greg Cotton, president of the Memphis Touchdown Club, on to discuss their phenomenal fall speaker series. It is absolutely loaded. Stick around. You're listening to The Gabe Kuhn Show with Connor Dunning on 92.9 FM ESPN.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows. And I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with. And Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy. It's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego sets play starts as early as 1.5, with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly, you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego bricks.
Lemonade! Fresh squeeze lemonade! Lemonade? Oh, nuts.
Is your business struggling to be seen? Not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.
Greg Cotton to talk about their amazing fall speaker series. You can follow the Memphis Touchdown Club on Twitter at TD Club Memphis. Greg, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Connor. Thanks for having me on.
No problem at all. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to jump on with us for just a few moments to talk about your fall speaker series. I'm really excited to get into it because I got to say, it is absolutely loaded. It's loaded every single time, but this one specifically has a couple of names that I'm very excited about. When you go through it, starting August 18th, you got the legendary Tony Barnhart, then you got Mack Brown, Bob Kesling, Ryan Silverfield, Rich Clark, Alyssa Klang, Clark Lee, and Cliff Odom coming up this fall. I did want to pick your brain just a little bit. Could you just let our listeners know how they can find tickets for each speaker, and what is the strategy that goes behind getting each speaker?
Well, first off, go to MemphisTouchdownClub.com. And you can pick up your membership there, or if there are individual tickets available, you can purchase them there on our website. We also have a Facebook page. You can go to Memphis Touchdown Club on Facebook, and it'll direct you right back to MemphisTouchdownClub.com. Speakers are hard to come by. They've really gotten more difficult because they are so tied up in the football season itself. They don't take that off week. The team may not play, but they're working 24/7. And so it's very difficult to get these people. Fortunately, we have developed some really good contacts and some good friendships with people over the years, such as Tony Barnhart, Mr. College Football. I mean, Tony is a great friend of the club and makes time for us every year. We've done the same thing with it. We've cultivated a good friendship with Alyssa Lang of the SEC Network and various coaches. We've gotten to be real good friends with Ryan Silverfield. Clark Lee, don't like to miss him because he's not only is he a good speaker, but he's been good to our club. And so that helps a lot when you develop the relationships with people. They're much more willing to take some time out and come down and speak.
Yes, sir. And like you said, all but one event will be held at Hilton Memphis Hotel. The Ryan Silverfield meeting, which I'm sure will have a lot of people in attendance here in the city of Memphis, will be held at the Hilton Garden Inn in Germantown. All events are going to be in the evening at 5:30. Membership costs, you can find all that information at MemphisTouchdownClub.com to purchase your 2025 Memphis Touchdown Club membership. Yeah. All 8 events would be $475 each, and then you can purchase individual ones as well. I do want to ask you about Ryan Silverfield and the Memphis football program coming up this fall. They had an extremely successful season last year, but I think that some people were a little bit disappointed because they didn't make it to the conference championship game. I just wanted to ask you and pick your brain on it for just a second. What do you think a fair expectation for Memphis football is heading into the fall?
Oh, I think they make the playoffs this year.
Oh, okay.
I mean, they should have made them last year. Everything didn't fall just right, but they've got a good team. They've been successful recruiting in the offseason. And from everything I hear, it looks like it'll be a good year for the Tigers. And I stand by. I'm really pulling for them to make the playoffs this year because I think they can do it.
Yes, sir.
And Ryan is just – Coach Silverfield is just a – he's a class act. and just always good to spend time with him. And so I want people to come out and see him. There'll be a lot of people at the Hilton, at the Garden Inn, Hilton Garden Inn in Germantown. It's great. It's a great venue if nobody's been there. But I do think that it looks like, I mean, when you look at the line, it looks like they're going to be pretty good shape on the lines, and that's monster. I mean, that's if you can't handle the lines, it doesn't matter what you got in the backfield. So, I'm excited. I think the Tigers will do real well this year.
Yes, sir. I think, you know, last year they had a legitimate chance to make it to the college football playoff, and then they had a couple of disappointing losses during the season and ultimately missed out on their own conference championship. But they were able to pick up a big victory in their bowl game against a legitimate school, legitimate competition. So they were able to keep some of the momentum from last season. And, you know, being here in Memphis, it can be hard to explain it to people who may be new Memphis Tiger football fans how bad it used to really be for Memphis football. So it does feel like they are on the precipice of being able to continue the momentum they've built the last few seasons. And Gabe has been describing it as a retooling season, but they still have enough talent, in my opinion, to make it to the conference championship game. If they can make it to the college football playoff, I think that would be amazing for this program, amazing for the city. But in my opinion, this year, at minimum, the expectation needs to be at least making it to the conference championship, because it just feels like it's been too long since that's happened.
Well, it has, but I do think if they can get to the championship, and I think they can, if they can get to the championship, I think you're going to see them in the playoffs. I mean, that would be monster, but I mean, I can remember, as you and I talked about, how bad it used to be. Mm-hmm. Unlike now, I mean, you know, these guys are competitive, and these guys can play anywhere, but they choose the Tiger program, and that tells you a lot about the program. You know, they've got a lot of these guys, most of these guys have got options. It's not the only place they can go. They can go play about anywhere they want to. And yet they choose the Tiger program. So that speaks so well of Ryan Silverfield and his staff.
Yes, sir. And not only are they choosing Memphis, but they're choosing to stay at Memphis. And I think that's a big thing as well. You know, we had a couple of players leave this offseason, but the retainment rate that Ryan Silverfield has continues to be high. And in the new age of college football in the NIL era, making sure you have consistency with your football team is a priority.
Absolutely. I mean, if you don't have that, if you can't retain some sort of continuity, you cannot be successful in today's game. Can't be done.
Yes, sir. I did want to.
You can't just roll over a year and year and year and hope that the right people show up.
Yes, sir. I did want to pick your brain also on this. You spoke about the college football playoff and the potential for Memphis being in there. In recent weeks, recent months, we've heard rumors of a 16-team expansion. We know that some of the bigger conferences, most notably the SEC, is trying to expand to 16 teams to make sure they can get as many of their teams in there as possible. Are you in favor of expanding the playoff from 12 to 16? And if you are, is there a format that you prefer? I know that, you know, you get the 5 and 11 as one of them, then you have one with the automatic bids. What is your opinion on the expansion of the college football playoff?
Well, I think that unfortunately money rules the day, and the dollars are so big, I don't think that the schools can afford to pass up to expand the opportunity to get into the playoff. And the only way you can do that is by adding more teams. I guess what's the way to say it? The formulas, I'm not so sure I'm in favor of automatic bids, because let's think about it. If you're in a weak conference and you get an automatic bid, that you're not going to be showcasing maybe the best of the best of your conference. But I don't think there's any question you're going to see an expansion to 16 teams.
I think you hit the nail on the head. It's all about money in this day and age of college football. And, you know, I think that last year, the 12-team college football playoff had a few issues with it, but ultimately I think it worked pretty well and it gave us some very exciting football games throughout the playoff. And I get, though, why, you know, the bigger conferences, they want more of their teams in, and that's going to lead to automatic bids. And unfortunately, the little guy or conference that Memphis is in, it might be one of those teams left on the outside. So that's why, you know, I understand the expansion to 16. It may end up helping Memphis in the long run if they can get into a different conference. But for now, I just, I wish it wasn't happening. You know, I wish that we would just say, you know what, 12 is good. Let's see how 12 works for a few seasons. And then if we decide, okay, 12 isn't working anymore, then we can expand to 16. It just seems like it's happening at such a rapid pace, the expansion. Well,
I mean, I agree. I just don't want to see that. It's almost like a knee-jerk reaction.
Right.
And you need to, you know, it's like cooking. You got to put the lid on and let it simmer a while and see what you got.
Yes, sir.
But, you know, that's the truth. That's the way it is. One thing I'd like to mention, if I could, folks, Memphis Touchdown Club, all of our events benefit La Bonner Children's Hospital. That is... We're very, very proud of that because La Bonner, everybody knows, and everybody in this town knows somebody. It may be a neighbor. It could be a coworker. It could be the person themselves. Everybody has had contact with La Bonner. And it's such a fine institution. I just couldn't let our time go by without mentioning that because we're really proud of that.
Yes, sir. And like you said, the fall speaker series is absolutely loaded. A couple of headliners. We have former Texas and North Carolina head coach Mack Brown, college football playoff executive director Rich Clark, along with a couple of head coaches. You have Ryan Silverfield from Memphis, Clark Lee from Vanderbilt would headline the Memphis Touchdown Club fall speaker series that starts on August 18th. The eight-event series will also feature Tony Barnhart, Michigan College Football, Bob Kesling, the former voice of the Tennessee Volunteers, Alyssa Lang from SEC Network, and Mississippi State Assistant Coach Cliff Odom. All of the events will be held at the Hilton Memphis Hotel, except for one, which will be Ryan Silverfield, which will be at the Hilton Garden Inn in Germantown. All of them will take place at 5:30. And again, you can go to memphistouchdownclub.com to purchase your tickets. Greg, last thing for you, if you could let my listeners know what they get with each ticket that they purchase for the fall speaker series.
Absolutely. Sure. Well, you get a dinner, have a nice meal. Get a chance to meet the speakers. The programs are always great, and the camaraderie just can't be beat. I mean, if you like college football, then Memphis Touchdown Club is where you need to be because that's what we're all about. And one of the things that I want to point out, too, that we are strong supporters of our high school athletes here in the Mid-South area. We always, if you're at a meeting, you're going to see the player, player of the week, and get to hear about them, get to hear from them, you know, what their plans are for the future. It's really an inspiring message that these young men have. I want to point out also 92.9 FM ESPN. You're one of our official media partners for the Fall Speaker Series. Landers Ford, our presenting sponsor for the Fall Speaker Series, and WREG-TV, another one of our media partners. We're real proud of being tied in with 92.9 FM ESPN.
Yes, sir. It's one of our favorite relationships. Every single spring and fall, we have the Touchdown Club Speaker Series to look forward to. Greg, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your day to talk about the Speaker Series with us. Right. And you can find more information at Memphis Touchdown Club on Twitter, at TD Club Memphis, and online. One more time, you can go to memphistouchdownclub.com. All the Memphis Speaker Series lineup info there and how to purchase tickets. Greg, thank you so much.
Thank you, Connor. Have a great afternoon.
Yes, sir. You too. That was Greg Cotton. He is president of the Memphis Touchdown Club. The fall series is going to begin on August 18th with Tony Barnhart. You can go to memphistouchdownclub.com to purchase your 2025 Memphis Touchdown Club membership. All Memphis Touchdown Club events benefit La Bonner Children's Hospital. And as he mentioned, we are very excited. 929 FM ESPN is one of the official media partners of the Fall Speaker Series. It's one of our favorite relationships that we have here in the city of Memphis. Make sure you go out to support the Memphis Touchdown Club so you can support La Bonner. Just an absolute killer lineup coming up this fall. One more time, August 18th, you have Tony Barnhart. September 8th, you have Mack Brown. September 15th, you have Bob Kesling, October 6th, Ryan Silverfield, October 13th, Rich Clark, October 20th, Alyssa Lang, and November 10th, Clark Lee. And finally, November 17th, Cliff Odom. One more time, go to memphistouchdownclub.com to purchase your 2025 Memphis Touchdown Club membership. When we come back, We are going to be joined by CBS Sports' David Cobb. Stick around. You're listening to Connor Dunning on The Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows, and I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with, and Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5, with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
Understanding power requires more than headlines. I'm Peter Hamby, host of The Powers That Be, a podcast from Puck examining politics, economics, and media to provide context, analysis, and clarity without sensationalism. We ask how power operates, who benefits, and what's at stake. If you want to move beyond breaking news to deeper understanding, join us on The Powers That Be. New episodes every weekday. Follow The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.